The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 3 minutes past nine, Thursday, the 27th of April. How are you doing? You're very welcome along to today's 9 till noon show. And it's a busy one for you. Lots coming up later on, actually, after 11. We have Dear Greg, and it's where we answer your relationship problems. We have our relationship expert in studio, on the program, Tara, who will... It is Tara, isn't it? Well, I know her name anyway. I'll get to that in a second. Taryn. And she'll be answering any questions you might have. So if there's something bothering you in your relationship and you don't want to talk to family or friends for fear that they might judge the person you're asking the question of, we can do that for you anonymously. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Emails come into us, comments at highlandradio.com, that's how. And watch the show, comment online, YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, like and subscribe if you use that service regularly, it's greatly appreciated. The same with our Facebook pages, we stream the show live across it and on Twitter as well. A lot of papers out on a Thursday morning, as you can imagine, and the Tyrconnell Tribune have done a deep dive into the Letterkenny area plan. So if you have an interest in it, now I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs as we normally do, but if you have an interest in the Letterkenny area plan, Declan Kerr and John McAteer have an extensive report on it, so well worth reading. Before I get to that, actually, congratulations to Father John Joe Duffy. He is obviously a Chrysler-based curate, as we all know. He's been awarded a prestigious national award for his ongoing work with Donegal Schools. The Burton Port-born cleric received the Sister Eileen Randalls Award at the Catholic Primary School Management Association conference held in Limerick this week. So good to see his work recognised. So back to this story about the Letterkenny Area Plan. As the members of the council arrived for a plenary meeting in Lifford on Monday, the difference of opinion among them were no further down the road to agreement than they were 2 months ago. The decision deadline to respond to the proposals from the OPR is 2 weeks away. For numbers of councillors, serious concerns have arisen over plans to redesignate prime development sites with the consequence of major financial devaluation for the owners. So as I say, there's a lot in that. I can't do it justice just reading the first couple of paragraphs, but get it and you'll read all about it. The Donegal News this morning, Gardaí have warned motorists of a crackdown on motoring offences across Donegal ahead of the bank holiday weekend. A highly visible Gardaí operation will be in place throughout the county with checkpoints, speed checks and patrols. The Gardaí warning comes in advance of the May bank holiday weekend, when there's likely to be more traffic on the roads and increased risk of collisions. Drivers are being urged to slow down, wear their seatbelts and not to drive under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And also on the front of the page, it tells us that Brian O'Donnell has retired from his post as road safety officer with Donegal County Council. Hopefully we might speak to him over the next wee while to talk about his role. But just to thank him personally for coming on the programme. It's kind of a thankless role to some extent, because the messages are quite clear, but often they aren't getting through. So really all you can do sometimes is reiterate them. And Brian always accepted our invites to come on and chat. And we wish him well in his retirement and whatever he's doing next. On to the Donegal Democrat now. A drunken prank saw a lorry driver have a miraculous escape after his vehicle ploughed into a garage forecourt sign. The metal sign was left dangerously in the middle of a busy road near a filling station in Castlefin. The sign had been placed on its side, meaning the driver did not see it until it was too late. Substantial damage was caused to the lorry, but the driver managed to bring the vehicle under control. Gardaí launched an investigation into the incident and two men were identified by CCTV. One of the men, 30-year-old Adam Gardner, appeared before Letterkenny District Court. The Derry News this morning tells us that Derry hotels are at over 90% capacity. Today sees the start of the island's biggest jazz festival, hosted right here in Derry. The city is gearing up for a packed weekend of live music and outdoor entertainment running from April 27th until May 1st. The City of Derry Jazz and Big Band Festival has gone from strength to strength over the past 22 years, establishing itself as the biggest celebration of its kind in Ireland, with over 70,000 music lovers expected to descend upon the city in the coming days. Hotel occupancy levels are currently sitting at over 90% ahead of the weekend, with people from all over the globe set to soak up the experience of jazz and blues that helped firmly place Derry on the tourist map. A huge crowd, and it'll be a great few days for people into that type of thing. And jazz is such a broad school. I would have initially thought it was just the, you know, what a lot of people might have seen as the traditional sort of jazz setup. But of course, as you get older, you realise it's much more complex, but nuanced. It's a big umbrella jazz. Irish Independent this morning. Bad news if you're an energy customer and you got billed twice. Well, we'll talk about it now in a second. If any of you have been affected by this, get in touch with us. Two of the biggest energy providers in the state have admitted billing errors that have affected thousands of their customers. Around 11,000 Electric Ireland customers are facing bill shocks after demurrage that a blunder means they have not been asked for a payment for months. So if you are an Electric Ireland customer, and some of you were in contact with us talking about not receiving bills a couple of weeks ago, and you were in contact with Electric Ireland and weren't getting any answers. We got no answers either. I wonder, is this connected now? Are the same people that weren't getting their bills now about to get a massive bill for a number of bills in succession, if that makes sense? Check your statements. The problem with this is, though, it's not just really the inconvenience of having to pay a large amount in one go. We're coming towards the end of the month when a lot of people's other bills, mortgages, etc., are due. And a big electricity bill that you weren't expecting, because they haven't taken money out of banks for some time for a number of customers, could mean that other payments bounce. So this could have a ripple effect that could be quite impactful on a lot of people that could find themselves with a bounced mortgage payment and no money going into the long weekend. Bord Gáis has apologised after mistakenly taking direct debit payments twice yesterday from 11,500 of its customers. Again, were you one of those? If you are a Bord Gáis Energy customer, double check that you have funds in your account, because they have taken the bill out twice for 11,500 of you. The supplier, Bord Gáis, was scrambling to reverse one of the two payments yesterday. State-owned Electric Ireland, which has more than 1.1 million customers, admitted a billing issue meant some of its customers have not received bills that were due last month. These are the people we've been speaking to. It comes at a time of energy crisis, with the bills that are overdue for a period when electricity and gas usages have been sky high. The early months of the year tend to see high energy use in homes. Okay, not good. On to the Irish Times now, and we're told that Sinn Féin politicians will not be given a free vote on potential changes to the existing abortion law. It's emerged. An independent review has recommended sweeping changes to the existing law, including an extension of the 12-week limit to access abortion in certain circumstances, decriminalisation of medical practitioners, and making the mandatory 3-day wait to access abortion medication optional. Now, this is going to be problematic for a lot of people listening, because much of the debate that was had in the run-up to this, and it was had in good faith amongst people, was that a 12-week limit would be in place. A lot of people that came on this programme, for example, they only voted yes for that reason. And it was a dilemma for them. And also the 3-day option, which some statistics were published yesterday, which shows around about 8,500 women made an initial contact with a GP, and then after the three-day cooling off period, or whatever they're calling it, the figure dropped down to just over 6,000 who wanted to progress with the abortion. But a Sinn Féin spokesperson said Sinn Féin elected representatives are expected to respect policy decisions taken by the Ardesh and to vote in line with party policy. A source said Sinn Féin intends to study Barrister Marie O'Shea's report in detail. The report has been referred by government to the Oireachtas Health Committee, which may recommend changes that would need to be voted on in the Dáil. A Sinn Féin Ardesh in June 2018 cleared the way for party TDs and senators to vote for legislation allowing for abortion up to 12 weeks. A separate motion at the time requested that all Sinn Féin members be allowed to articulate and vote in the issue of abortion in accordance with their conscience. That was rejected. Leo Varadkar said that no decision has been made by the government on any of the legislative proposals put forward by the independent review, but he did sort of suggest, I think, didn't he, in some of his comments, that he would have not issues, I don't want to misquote him, but concerns if elements, key elements that people voted on were changed. I think that's along the lines of what he said. Oh, was that Micheál Martin? I'm confused now because tarnished a Taoiseach. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I'll clarify that a little later on. The Irish Daily Mail tells us that the Green Party has criticised a proposed new rural political movement that would fight back against their policies, warning them talk is cheap. The Irish Daily Mail revealed last week that independent TD Michael Fitzmaurice is seeking to set up a new pro-agriculture party in what he called the last round in the fight for rural Ireland. But the Green Party's rural development spokesperson, Senator Roisin Garvey from County Clare, has hit back, telling this newspaper, "I don't know what their definition of rural is. Is it anybody outside the pale? Little turf fires like Peg Sayers? Most of Ireland isn't that at all. Things have changed," she says. More on the potential emergence of two parties. Now, this, if I'm Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, by the way, this is Fan Dabby Dozy, I think, because I believe there is a core support for both of those parties that will come out. And there is support outside of that core support that will come out as well. But then where the decision, the election could be decided out here in the Sticks, you have a number of parties kind of saying the same thing or providing an opposition that talks to the electorate. It splits the vote. And I would be rubbing my hands together if I was involved in the main parties in government at the moment, because this potentially is really, really good news for them. An opposition vote being split all over the place, because I don't think you're going to turn many Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael voters who are there for the long haul. They're going to see it through. I could be wrong on that, but that's my sense. But in the Irish Sun, it tells us that rural voters could have two new political parties to choose from at the next election, with several independent TDs considering starting up new groups. As we heard, Roscommon Galway TD Michael Fitzmaurice has spoken with reps across the country about creating a new political party to represent farmers in rural Ireland. The independent TD believes the current political parties are too city and town focused, and he claims areas beyond that are not being properly represented. Elsewhere, though, Cork TD Michael Collins is working with independent TDs Richard O'Donoghue and Matty McGrath to set up a new rural community party. Deputy Collins claims the group have up to 20 candidates ready to run in the next year's local elections for their Rural Ireland Party. But I imagine they'll just be a group of independents in the Dáil and exercise their power that way, because they've shown how successful it currently is, isn't it, in influencing policy and what goes on in the Dáil. The Farmers Journal this morning: MACRA has demanded that the government establish a farm retirement scheme in which older farmers would be paid to exit the sector. Retiring farmers should be paid the equivalence of €2,910 per cow to exit farming. MACRA President John Keane told the Irish Farmers Journal. He said that the funding already earmarked for a dairy cow reduction scheme should instead be redirected to fund MACRA's proposed succession scheme. There should be no land use restrictions in such a scheme, MACRA said in a letter handed to Taoiseach Leo Varadkar yesterday at the end of its protest. And we spoke to people on that protest yesterday. I sometimes think that people involved in big stories, stories that are going to be big, should definitely seek a little bit of PR counsel before reacting. And that's a case in point, I think, for Ireland's Eurovision entry hopefuls, Wild Youth, because in reacting to this story that we're going to talk about now and in the way that they did, I think it's kind of really backfired on them, and it's going to tarnish their entire thing. Eurovision hopefuls Wild Youth said they're trying to stay in a positive mindset after author J.K. Rowling accused them of misogyny for sacking their creative director over his social media comments on transgenderism. The band's Eurovision performance was thrown into chaos on Tuesday after the group cut all ties with Ian Banham, their staging director, for his social media comments on a story about a transgender rapist convicted of a knife attack. Now, there's one problem here with this story, and unfortunately too with what J.K. Rowling has said, and I'm not taking sides in this as such. It wasn't one single comment. He's made numerous comments as it relates to transgenderism. If you just look through his Twitter, you don't have to look at just one single comment. He does have form in this regard. The comments sparked major reaction on Twitter, with Harry Potter author Rowling wading into the row, accusing the Irish act of preening self-satisfied misogyny. The row first erupted after Wild Youth released a statement saying they were parting ways with Ian Banham. Now, Ian Banham does speak to quite a large group of people out there. A lot of women, for that matter, a lot of people from all different backgrounds who will row in behind him. It's not necessarily an absolute minority. And I think Wild Youth could have reacted in a different way. But anyway, they're going to have to... It's tarnished their whole thing now, I think. Finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar ruled out introducing price caps on groceries amid concerns it could lead to rationing and shortages. During leaders' questions in the Dáil yesterday, Labour's Jed Nash called on the government to examine if price controls could be put in place to tackle rising prices for consumers. He said over the last year alone, food prices rose by over 13%. Milk is nearly up 25%, butter's up 21%, eggs up 20%. That's grand. But what's happening is a lot of businesses are actually, the big ones, are just ramping up prices to increase their profits. There are obviously going to be some products like those mentioned that the impact input costs have gone up greatly. They're going to go up, but it's across the board here. And there is profiteering going on. I think that's kind of broadly accepted. First guest with us now, shortly. And we welcome onto the programme now Father Francis Bradley, who's the parish priest of Buncrana and Fon. Good morning to you, Father. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, you have got to the point, and I presumed it's based on experience and conversation and what you see, where you thought it necessary to speak about social media, and particularly, is it, Father, its impact on our young people?
Yeah, well, it has an impact on a constituency much broader than our young people. It impacts on every one of us, whether we're adults or children. But yes, I'd say, well, what crystallized this was the unspeakably tragic death of a 13-year-old child here in Buncrana on Friday week, last the 14th of April. And but that's just the latest episode in what I see as a growing trend in relation to our use of social media. Whilst I don't want to get into the specifics of that little girl's death, nevertheless, it has drawn to a head for me something that I think needs to be addressed. And look, I'm a very small voice voicing concern about something which is a tsunami across the world, not only across the country, across the world, and that is our dependence, our growing dependence on social media without ever really tackling the pitfalls and the dangers that are inherent in our use of social media.
We probably view the internet, the social media, as a way of, you know, interacting with other people, expressing views, forming friendships. I don't know, everyone sees it in a different way, but you seem to have concerns that that's kind of a counterintuitive situation, that it's not that at all.
Well, it is that, but it's not merely that. You know, it's like every other good thing. If used properly, it can be of benefit, but when abused or when used improperly, it's very destructive. And our use of social media promises us immediate and personal communication on a world platform, and we can we can publish and we can float our ideas and share our experiences right across the world with some limited filter available to us to guarantee and safeguard our privacy. But by the same token, we also open ourselves to what can be a very malicious, predatory and harmful experience in our lives. And that is particularly, I think it's true for adults, but it's particularly true for our children.
And what do you see the greatest impact this is having on children? How do you, in your experience, see it affecting them?
Well, I'm obviously not a parent myself, but I interact with lots of parents. I see kids like everyone else sees them. I see them in school, or I see them coming from or going to school, or maybe in their activities outside of school. and you know, you're driving to work, or you're driving to the office, or you're moving about, let's say, at school going time in the morning or in the evening, and kids are walking along and their faces are buried in their screens, okay, to such an extent that, in fact, it becomes a danger where they're coming to a junction and they might easily walk out in front of something. So something has caught their attention, and that, I guess, that's a good thing, and it's a wonderful first. You know, it's a blue ribboned prize for marketing and advertising, and it catches our attention. The difficulty is that whilst many forms of social media promise us immediate and personal communication, what it is actually delivering in so many, many cases is complete isolation. Mm-hmm. Because I talk to parents who can't get their kids out of their room. I talk to people who say, God, you know, my kids are so aggressive, they're so angry, they're so, they seem to be isolated. We're a country that prides itself on our ability to be sociable, to be good in a group, to be, you know, full of fun and the life and soul of the party, and yet our abuse of this of social media can, in fact, drive us into ourselves. Mm. And by the way, this is not just children. You know, you sit in a restaurant from time to time, and you look around you maybe, and there's a couple maybe at another table, and they're both sitting there, you know, faces into their phones. They don't appear to be communicating with each other, or if they are communicating with each other via their telephones, it's an unusually complex way of trying to communicate with somebody who's sitting in front of you.
And Father, equally, also to what is an issue, I think, particularly for young people, is that people turn often to the internet or social media if they aren't feeling well, or there's a weakness in themselves, or they don't like something about themselves. And that's not a healthy place to go, because actually what happens is people exploit that, or people will use that as a weapon to beat you with, or your problems end up getting amplified. So the solution, in inverted commas, is actually often what might compound how someone is feeling about themselves.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's much too easy a solution to grasp, to such an extent that it may not be a solution at all. You know, for the last 15 or 20 years, quite properly in the church, for example, we've been coming to terms with the need for safeguarding. Now, this to my mind, especially in the lives of children, is a safeguarding issue. You know, we'd be very careful, for example, just using that image again of looking at children going to school in the morning or coming home in the evening. Parents, for the most part, wouldn't allow their children to walk to school in the morning. Okay, so our lines of traffic build up as parents deliver their children safely to school. Mm-hmm. That's the parents' decision, and that must be respected. But the same application of the need for safety has to be applied to other areas of their life. You know, because it's not so much that this is the elephant in the room. This is the wolf lurking in the bedroom. It's in the bathroom. It's in the it's in all their social interaction. And yes, it for the most part, I hope it is positive, but it has terribly destructive effects where it is not positive. It is a harsh and toxic environment. It's not so much that we release our children into this, but we release this amongst our children.
Mm. But I also would argue...
And it's a lot of pressure for parents and others to be under, and teachers in schools, you know, where, you know, attention time for kids is going down and down and down. Everything is boring if it doesn't... You know, the face of the person sitting opposite them is of no use if that face doesn't glow with a blue light.
And also, Father, the problem is I think a lot of us adults, many of us, if not most of us, are not actually equipped for the toxicity, the negativity, the conflict, the division on social media. If we're not able to deal with that, how can we expect young children or teenagers to deal with that? And I just feel we've gone so far now, it's going to be very hard for us to take any steps backwards.
Sure, it has stolen a march on us. Really, and you know, you meet parents who are stressed in many ways, maybe with a child in the pushchair. The child is playing with a mobile phone already at the age of two or three, you know, becoming conditioned to knowing that this is the means of their entertainment. This is their, this is where they're going to find engagement. You know, I'm just very concerned about it. And tragically, we have to deal with the terrible fallout of that. And as I say, I'm a very small voice being raised in questioning this tidal wave of compliance that we've allowed ourselves to become part of in relation to our dependence on social media. And I have to hold up my own hand. I'm as dependent as the next on it.
Yeah, I get you. Father Francis Bradley, it's not an insignificant voice. It's a powerful intervention into this debate, and we appreciate you coming on and sharing your views with us on air. And I wish you a good day, and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Take care. Okay, that's Father. God bless you too. Father Francis Bradley, parish priest of Buncrana in Farn. And as you say, an awful tragic case that has... It's not a case, an awful tragic event that has triggered his speaking publicly on that matter. We're going to stay in a show now because Councillor Nicholas Crossan joins us on the programme. Thanks for taking the time out this morning, Councillor. I appreciate your time. We don't have long, so we'll get straight into it if that's okay. We've been speaking now about this new residential zoned land tax and its impact on Buncrana. What's your observations here, Nicholas?
My observations, like, this is a tax that's coming in early next year, payable by next year, on land that is zoned strategic reserve or residential in and around not only Buncrana but in the rest of the county, Greg. But it does affect Buncrana because we have a local town plan here coming back from the time that Buncrana was a town council. Mm-hmm. Any land that was zoned residential now is liable for a tax, but there seems to be a grey area that I've asked at a meeting on Tuesday in Lifford, that it has to be serviced land, but the planners are maybe saying that as long as it's accessible to services, that it can be zoned. So I have been making representation on behalf of the farmers in and around Buncrana area that have come to me and said some of them have land for in their family for over 120 years, others have 90 and 70, and they, these are not speculators, Greg. These are not people who bought land in the last couple of years willing to wait on the land prices to go up. These are people who farm all their life. And in my opinion, this is unfair. It's an unjust. It's an unbelievable tax that our government would introduce. So we have a meeting next week with the planners for the Inishowen area to discuss the possibility of taking some of these people that want out of the system. And believe me, there are other people who want into the system and can't get into the system. So we're trying to find a happy medium ground.
Yeah, we were speaking to the IFA earlier in the week it was described as a blunt instrument, and that's exactly what it is. Some people would, of course, like land rezoned because it means it can be increase in value, what have you. But we can't have a situation, can we, where people who have been farming the same land for generations are being taxed out of agriculture, and that is seemingly what's happening. Some people feel it's like a land grab. Is that what you're hearing yourself?
Well, one of the farmers told me that they would have to sell one or two fields to pay the tax. Mm. So that just doesn't make sense at all, Greg, in anybody's language. You know, there are parcels, and there's an instrument, as you said, a blunt instrument. But in places around Leinster, around the coast, or around the city of Dublin, Cork and Galway, where maybe there's a huge, huge demand on houses, looking for thousands and thousands of houses. But here in Donegal, we're in rural Donegal.
Yeah, but the problem with that, Nicholas, sorry to cut across you, is what we're seeing, and we've seen it in Cork already and elsewhere, is developers who have land for housing in high-pressure areas are being given a buy. They're being given exemptions out of this. Yet we have a farmer in Buncrana with the same land for 120 years. A house may never actually be built on this land, and they are being forced with this tax. It doesn't make sense.
I have stated that for years, that there's people who are genuine farmers. And if you are talking to the genuine farmer who loves the land and loves working on the land, they have no interest in selling their land. They want to farm their land. And those people should be allowed to do that without an unfair taxation coming down on top of them. Mm. Now, this taxation, this bill, although there could be amendments put into it, and I would sincerely hope that the Farmers Association, along with our TDs in Dublin, this is where it's happening, where the bills are passed, that there would be specifications, and they say that if there's land in the family for years, they're not speculators, and they want to maintain, want to keep their land. I would agree. There are speculators who have bought hordes of land, and accumulating this and waiting for the price to get up, to go up, so they can sell it and make a profit on it. I tax those people who want to build on it, mm-hmm. but not the farmers.
All right. So
and another thing, Greg.
Go ahead.
Just add this one in case that I do forget about it. This is prime agricultural land that we're talking about, and the changing climate in the world. God, Ireland is a good producer of food and beef and dairy cattle and dairy produce. Why can we not keep our good agricultural land for agricultural? We have plenty of places where we have that is not suitable for growing anything, but certainly would be suitable for housing. And then why don't we build houses on land that is not used for agriculture? I mean, this plan hasn't been thought through.
Okay, when's that meeting taking place finally again?
I haven't got a date on it, but I think it's one day early next week.
Okay, let us know.
And then the show, and we'll certainly keep you posted, and anybody else is interested on it. So there's reading, and I was reading through an awful lot of stuff, and this has been brought into the Department of Finance and the Department of Housing and Local Government. And you know, when the Department of Finance gets their hands on anything, the tax will be paid on it, mm-hmm. and this is going to put farmers off their family land that had farmed for generations.
All right, listen, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. Okay.
All right, take care. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call on 07491 25,000. This caller says, as an Irish Republican, I'm disgusted that Michelle O'Neill has accepted an invitation to the coronation of Charles in May. What has our struggle been about all these years? It's been welcomed by some, criticised by others. What do you think? Do you think Michelle O'Neill was correct in accepting the invite to that coronation? It is presumably the way forward. Michelle O'Neill says that she wishes to represent all sides of her community as First Minister. All communities, sorry. And I suppose if she were to refuse that invitation, how could she do that? I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 07491 25,000, 07491 25,000. There was never an independent review, as Barrister O'Shea, who was in control of the so-called review, was a prominent campaigner for unrestricted abortion during the referendum. I've not yet read the full report, but I hope our TDs will show some respect for life, they say. Let's return to the issues and concerns raised by Father Bradley. Conal joins us on the programme for this conversation. Conal, thanks for taking the time out this morning.
Okay, now, yeah, it was a very enlightening conversation you had with Father Bradley, and it's very important, I think, that discussion is carried on much further through the whole political arena, because I think politics, as we know it, is stuck on a time warp too, about issues, you know, and debating issues. And the Dáil is used a lot of the time to discuss issues that are not really fundamentally hugely important for the country, whereas something like that is really... It's so important to discuss it, because it's,
I think, a lot of the stuff Conal now discussed in the Dáil and other parliaments, it's not exclusive to the Dáil, is distraction. It's to look at this so that you don't look at that. I mean, when was the last time, say, for instance, you know, the mental health of our young people or the greater population and the impacts of that, people dying by suicide, when did that dominate the front pages for 5 or 6 days? When did that lead to a heated row during Dáil's leaders' questions? Are we being represented by anyone in the Dáil then, if they're not talking about this stuff?
Well, I think politics has to have a conversation with itself, and that's all political parties, as to what its function really is. You know, because when you see what is happening, I mean, it has to address issues. I mean, it can be dominated by the formation of a new rural party or the sale of a site by some other politician, or I mean, I've seen a heading in the paper yesterday, which is, I can't understand it at all, in the paper about Joe Biden should be in a more or less in a nursing home, you know, mm-hmm. this type of thing. And I mean, Look, I'm old enough to realise that the whole of life is a learning process. And what has happened this last 25 years and the whole social media thing and a whole change of a way of life completely is not debated in the political arena the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And that's a big issue. And even here in this county, you know, I mean, we know these things are happening and we fail to debate them, as you say, the causes of the destruction, the causes of mental health and everything else, you know.
Yeah,
and we need to debate and a conversation among ourselves, and it has to start with politicians about looking at what their role is in the modern Ireland that we have and how it can be changed to make things better. I mean, there's nothing wrong with changing politics. It's just the same as it was 50 years ago, you know, these type of debates and that, you know, but it's such a different world now, and there's such issues like that, what Father Bradley brought up, that they have to be brought to the forefront of centre parliament, you know.
Yeah, but unfortunately, and the media has its role to play in this, we talk about stuff that really, it's obviously important, but it's not the big issue. You know, the whole debate that's dominating American, Irish to some extent, and certainly British television news at the moment is this whole woke agenda and the fight over that. I'm not saying it's not insignificant, but it doesn't pay the mortgage, you know what I mean? It doesn't get you a hospital bed. It doesn't prevent you being outside Letterkenny University Hospital's ED in a trolley in an ambulance for 12 hours. That debate, yes, it's important. We need to get that right. But it is talked more about than it is important, if that makes sense, compared to all the other issues that are going on in life. And it's just one issue after the other. We all just argue about something that's not really necessarily what we should be. We have our eyes off the
ball. Yeah, I mean, I've been in your programme many times saying, and this has gone on now for 10 years, about a fair deal scheme for home care, that people can stay in their own home and you can have a system in place that there's a good fair deal scheme to help to get early release from hospital and keep people out of nursing homes that maybe not necessarily have to go there. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm in community development all my life and I'm over 70, but I was in Roscommon in the 70s and I remember going to this man. He lived in poor conditions and I was involved myself in a voluntary organisation at that time, and everybody was saying he should go in to the local nursing home, you know. But I had a conversation with him and I thought that was right. I was in my 20s that time. I had a conversation with him, but he told me, look, every day I get up, I have to feed the dog. I have to make me tea. I meet the travelling shop. I see the postman. The day doesn't belong going in. And he says, if I go in there, I've nothing to do the whole day. Mm. Now, I thought he was wrong that time because I was young.
Yeah.
But I'm that age now, and I think I now know he was right.
Mm-hmm.
But that debate needs to occur too, mm-hmm. from people that's retired. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, elderly people, and include that myself, they're the people that's recipients of the care. But maybe a lot of the time it's decided by people that's young, that haven't
well, you see,
of a lifetime.
Connell, this is the power, right, that the media and politics has. If you think about it, and I've talked about this extensively on the programme because I have a real problem with it, older people are probably not willing to speak out because they're seen as the problem. They're the people that we can't afford to look after because people are retiring too young. They're the people that are clogging up hospitals. Do you know the narrative that's out there? Older people are lambasted and blamed for everything if you actually look into how the conversation is happening. So if you're an older person, you're going to keep your head down below the parapet because you'd be afraid of it getting chopped off if you dared speak about your own rights.
No, I think older people have to speak up. I mean, I'm greatly involved here in my own parish and community development and all aspects of it, and maybe in everything. Maybe I'm in too many things, and maybe I'm in them too long. But I think I have a contribution to make. And I think a lot of the times, communities undersell themselves totally and their capacity to deal with an awful lot of the problems that they have in their own parish. And the parish is a great unit. And we're underselling our capacity to run our own affairs to some degree, looking too much for centralised solutions to everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what better way of getting people involved in the community and say, look, what can we do but this, that and the other thing
mm-hmm.
in the community and the parish? And I think people will achieve an awful lot and they can do far more. But I think politics has to change to realise that this total centralised...
Was it you I was talking to about going back to the system of providing housing in local communities through... Maybe it wasn't you, but
I was involved in Ardran.
Yeah, but that's my point. Exactly, I appreciate that. But I mean, like, that is, again, I thought that was a very common sense intervention from you, Connell, in that we have a system, and it might seem old now, where, that actually delivered houses where they were needed in the area. Why aren't we giving the 1 billion euro that we're not spending on housing that's been allocated for it to organisations like we might have seen in the past that will actually start delivering houses in the areas that they're needed from? We know how it works, so we used to do it.
Well, I'm pushing it very much at the moment. I'm pushing a project, a very local project here, not far from myself, similar to that, because there are so many young people, in for instance, in nursing homes that they can't have care in their own community of a building that's suitable for their care. And, you know, with a little bit of backup, you don't need a lot of backup. And you also need, I find now that you need mixed development. You need young families, you need elderly people, all together in a community of buildings. Because what happens then is the younger people and the younger children get automatically interlinked with the elder people and see them as, you know, as part of the thing. Whereas there's a great tendency now to put us all in boxes, that I'm put in a box when I'm over 70 and I shouldn't be saying this and that, that I should listen to this. But there's so many solutions out there, you know, and we're intelligent people and we are great community people. But sometimes we just, writing that first line on the sheet of paper and calling that first meeting is all what's so important, you know.
But another thing too, and this is no disrespect to anyone, I'm not calling anyone out, right, but a lot of too, what are the conversations you see in social media is the fear of what might happen, what is coming, what's going to happen, what could happen here, what could happen there. And not enough people are talking about what's happening now. We've got record levels of the abuse of children right now. We've got record levels of children harming themselves right now. We've got record levels of children seeking help for their poor mental health right now. Look what, with the older generation, for example, look at all the problems they are experiencing right now. The same with the squeezed middle in inverted commas. Yet if you go on any campaign pages, anything on social media now, and don't get me wrong, it's justified and people are entitled to campaign on what they want, but it's about what might happen, what could happen, what happens if this happens and then that might happen, and what kind of a society might we have then? And no one is having a conversation about the mess that's happening right now, because we're all distracted.
Look, we're making things far too complicated in so many respects. I mean, I'll give you another example. When I was in Roscommon in the 70s, I was in charge of farm water supplies. I went out to this house, and the man had chronically suffered from MS, and he had no water. And it was a very expensive place to put in water. I could have cancelled that application. Or I could say, look, can I community do something about this? And I asked a well-boring contractor, would he look at it in the context of maybe they would organise something to get it done? And in fairness, the man then he bore the well, and he hit water. And I went on into the hardware man in Roscommon, and he drove out. He said, look, we'll do this job, you know, and we'll manage to get it done and all that. And I could have cancelled that application, or I could do something about it. But in the modern world that we have, if I was a civil servant and that, you couldn't do things like that.
No, you
because
couldn't.
You're breaking regulations. Mm. But the goodness of people has to be always paramount of importance over total red tape and bureaucracy that doesn't serve the end purpose in
right.
any way.
Conal, listen, thanks for your time as always. I appreciate it. I wish we had more time. A caller says mental health in this country is on its knees, and I agree with Father Bradley. Social media is to blame. There's such a huge pretense of this perfect world on social media. Many influencers now admit one perfect photo may have took 20 shots to get it right. Indeed. So Father Bradley is 100% right. I see it all the time in my grandchildren. Because their mother restricts their time, it's the first thing they ask for in my house. So we have a deal. We have to do an activity to get 15 minutes on the phone. And very often, once they start the activity, they forget all about phone time. Greg, I think Michelle O'Neill's 100% right going to Charles's coronation. I think people need to move on in life and get over the past. She is showing everyone the true meaning of respect. Another, I think Michelle O'Neill going to the coronation is shameful. I hope she enjoys the limelight she is at the moment, because it certainly won't last. She isn't representing everyone in Northern Ireland, and it shows. Back to Father Bradley's comments. Thank you so much, Father Bradley, for shining a light on this. I think the whole social network thing is an addiction, and worse than alcohol. We need to pray for the younger generation that they can get through this. The problem is that it's here now. And Father Bradley corrected me a couple of occasions, because he sees it from all angles.
It is a wonderful thing, the internet and what have you, and social media is too, but it is a very, very difficult space to be in, really, dependent on what part of it that you're in. And it's not going to change now. It's part of everything. Look at the Niall Collins story. It started on social media. Look at, if the Pope makes a statement, he makes it on Twitter now. His intervention on things like the Ukraine war or a message, it's posted first on Twitter. That's the Pope himself. I'm not saying that as a criticism either, but that's where it's at. That's how it's happening. So we can't avoid it, can we? We just have to figure out how we can do it and maintain our well-being.